This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
We all take on different roles every day. One minute you're a parent, the next a chef, or a driver. That's why the Volvo XC40 Recharge is designed to be as versatile as you are. It's fully electric and includes a 360-degree camera, Google built-in, and more. Contact your local retailer to learn more or visit volvocars.com/US. The Volvo XC40 Recharge, for every you. Some equipment optional. Google is a trademark of Google LLC.
And welcome to Crushed by Margaret K. Bourne-Smith, a podcast that relives the joy and horror of unrequited love so you don't have to. My guest today is the brilliant comedy writer, performer, broadcaster, raconteur and gourmand, Chris Neal. Hello, Chris.
Hello.
Hello, do you accept all of those titles?
Yeah, and that's very thrilling. That sounds like a sort of terribly old-fashioned... I might be appearing at some sort of club doing an after-dinner thing.
Oh, you're totally in Who's Who. So, Chris, one of the reasons that I wanted to talk to you was you did a show on Radio 4 that I absolutely love, but it's called... Well, some of it is called, has different titles.
Oh, because lots you have of to subtitles. Be
yeah. One of the subtitles is True Tales of Romance and Failure, which could be the subtitle to this show. So I'm assuming you're an expert in this area. Would you say so?
Well, I don't know about an expert. I remember the producer wanted to rename it True Tales of Failure and Romance. And I said, no, that's not the way it works.
No.
I don't know. It's funny, I've listened... to some of these shows. And the funny thing is, growing up gay, of course, there's none of that sort of frivolity attack. Well, growing up gay in the 80s, as I did, there was none of that sort of frivolity of having a crush on someone.
Sure.
It was potentially quite sort of dangerous.
Yeah, because you can't be kissing posters of men.
No,
on your
I was
walls.
Very lucky. I had this little sort of cohort of friends, and we were known affectionately in our year as the Puffs and Lesbians.
P&L.
The P&L. Actually, there were only two puffs and no lesbians. Mm. I mean, there was one woman who kind of, played around a bit over the years. But, I mean, she would have never committed herself to lesbianism. There was an upside to it. We were, out of the dreary day-to-day life of the school. And me and my friend Emma, the one who sort of played around a bit, we would, at school, I remember on Wednesdays and Fridays, I had geography and Latin and she had sociology and Latin, and we made this kind of decision for O-levelers that we just didn't need to go. So on Wednesday we would walk into Richmond Town Centre and have tea in Dickens and Jones, and on Fridays I'd go a bit further afield, and she had very wealthy parents who always gave a lot of money, so we always had money. We got on the tube and we went up to Screen on Baker Street, as it was then, and we saw Dance with a Stranger, and this was like the sort of 2 p.m. showing on a Friday afternoon. So it was time enough that we could watch the film, get home, and then I could get in the door and be ready to watch Wonder Woman or whatever was on the telly, and no one would be any the wiser. And I had a huge crush, obviously, on Rupert Everett.
Obviously.
At that time. And that was fun. You could sort of share that. But I don't remember them being real people. It was the only other person I remember at that time having a crush on was in my... And I wrote an episode which sort of mentioned this in this radio series, was we had a French textbook about a family called Les Duval.
This is what I wanted to ask you about.
Oh, no, ask away.
Well, no, because you mention in Worth that, so you have a crush on the boy from your textbook.
Yeah.
Was it photos?
No, pen and ink drawings.
Oh my God, so sweet. So pen and ink, you had a crush on a pen and ink drawing.
Yeah, a selection of pen and ink drawings.
Did that just make it, because it was very safe to fancy a pen and ink drawing, you would never have to address that.
I think so. And he was a cello playing. He was a bit older, so I was about 14. He must have been about 18, because he was the older brother. He had his younger sister that they used to go to the discotheque together, and he played the cello, and he was a trainee accountant. And I just found this
hot.
It wasn't sort of sexy, but it was
isn't. Yeah,
and I think I was about 13 or 14, I mean, that was the first kind of this feeling of attaching these feelings of longing rather than desire, I guess, onto someone. I don't remember.
Did you want to go and see him in an orchestra and sort of learn how to do his taxes with
him?
No,
I was just quite happy to read about how he washed up the dishes to help his mother.
I mean, that is still something that's very attractive, no? in a man.
I don't remember really dwelling on him massively between French lessons. But I do remember getting into French.
Well, you're writing about him however many years later. He made an impression.
Later, I'm still kind of going, oh, yeah.
What was his name?
He was called Jean-Claude.
Jean-Claude.
But I mean, the brilliant thing was the book was called Les Duval, about his family called the Duvals. And there was a really rough boy called Harvey who sat next to me, who was really shocked when he discovered it wasn't about a bloke called Les. And that there was a whole family of them. Oh my God, but he's not even called Les Duval. No, he's Monsieur Duval.
Yeah, it's not a very French name, Les.
Les. I suppose Leslie Carroll.
Oh, yes, yes.
So, anyway, but yeah, and I mean, they weren't particularly full on these pen and ink drawings there in
I imagine.
Textbook.
It's not the joy of sex levels of drawn on.
So I don't know. I mean, so at school there wasn't really.
Yeah,
there,
I was going to say,
there was a sort of a succession later on, but that not at school there wasn't. But I think when I grew up gay, you didn't have. I mean, you obviously sort of fancied people ish, but I think you can't. I think part of having a crush on someone is making a down payment on your future, on a potential future. And growing up gay, as I did in the 1980s, I had friends who knew I was gay. I was very lucky, but I didn't come out. I was terrified. I have a twin sister who was at school with me, and we had lived completely separate lives at school. I was terrified that she would report back to my parents.
Did she know?
Not officially. I remember there was one horrible incident at home where things sort of exploded in a sort of family argument, and my sister said, I'm not going to have anything to do with him because everyone thinks he's queer.
Oh, God.
And so that wasn't great. But
what age was that?
We were probably about 15.
That's rough.
Yeah, it was quite hard. And I mean, I was horrible to her as well, but we lived completely separate lives at school. Pretty separate lives now. But so I think because that idea of the down payment on your future, I couldn't have a crush on someone. You can't. I mean, I suppose you can respond biologically to things, but I couldn't. Part of the thing about growing up gay was I couldn't imagine what a future was. I remember sitting, there was a TV drama about Oscar Wilde, which I watched with my mother, which was a bit. And at the end, she said, oh, it's just all so sad because they're all alone.
Yeah, I couldn't really sort of argue
with that. No, I didn't know.
That generation are obsessed with it's just a lonely life.
Yeah,
it's
it was just, a lonely life.
Lonely and dismissal.
And, you know, my parents aren't like that at all now. But, I mean, as a kid, and I couldn't sort of go, no, but look at Barry and George down the road. They're great. Because there was no one.
No.
So I think sort of without that in the future, it's very hard to have the crush bit in the present.
Well, because I was another thing in your show was you talk about when you were 10 and you were discussing what your life was going to be like when you were 20, and
you mentioned being the one listener.
I'm a big fan. And you talk about how you wanted a wife called Yvonne.
Yvonne,
and but when you pictured her, she had very short hair and a suit.
And turned up in a suit and tie. Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, have I married Elaine Stritch?
Yes, I'm laughing at my own jokes.
You're laughing at your own jokes. It's good
Rory
work.
Always
I mean, good
oh my God,
delivery.
Laugh at your own jokes all the time. But yeah.
Well, since you're the only other listener apart from me, it might as well.
That's fine, fair enough. And yeah, that was my fantasy, that I would be married. I would have this dull job. I would work in the book department at Bentles in Kingston.
Lovely.
And on a Friday, we would go out for a curry. That is what we would do. If we had the means, we would have a curry. And then when I sort of thought this through, I thought I was just being quite sensible, you know. This was
it's a very sad fantasy, isn't it?
And it's
a sort of
slightly reflects your own,
that,
you know, we had a curry as a treat as a family. Mm. So that's quite a nice thing. So, but it never occurred to me. I mean, maybe at 10, obviously. Well, I was about to say maybe at 10, obviously, I didn't have a sexuality. But I do think you know earlier. And I do remember the very, very, very first anything which could be constituted as a crush we were in junior school. So the oldest would have been say 11, 10, 11. And it was in the summer and we were taken out onto the playing field and we had this teacher and she took us out there and she said, this is, and I can't remember his name, but he was obviously, I guess, a student teacher, mm-hmm. a training teacher or something. And he must have been, I don't know, 19, 20.
But at that age, that is.
And that was like, old, probably, yeah. But kind of also, he was sort of different from the teachers.
Yes.
You know? And I remember we played rounders or something like that. Anyway, but I didn't. And this is the first sort of sexual thing that I remember. Was he lifted his arm and it was a hot summer's day and he was wearing a t-shirt and I saw his armpit hair. And I thought, oh my God.
Yeah.
He's like gorgeous, but also like awful.
Why awful?
Because it was kind of adult and sexual. I knew the feelings were somehow sexual. So like,
it's sort of that pre-sexual thing, isn't it? And the sort of the terror of, oh God, is this? Yeah.
When why
before
is that
you've
nice?
Actually, before you're actually thinking.
Yeah. Oh
about
yeah. I couldn't
even
give a name
kissing
to it or
you know, it's just a sort of flush.
And there was certainly no sort
something.
Of boys at primary school I kind of had a crush on in a very kind of easygoing way. This was a much more kind of thunderboltish kind of feeling.
And I can still rude, isn't it? It's so rude seeing armpits as well somehow. I think I still feel like that if I say men in vests.
I know what you mean. There's something much more intimate about an armpit
so
than lots
intimate.
Of things. Yeah, yeah. 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 Do you know what? You're right. But like, let's be honest. I've seen pornography throughout my life. Armpits don't play a big part. They're not, you know, if someone
really?
Lifted their
oh,
arms,
no, I'm...
If someone
I'm
lifted their arms,
that.
You go, oh my God, you dirty bastard. Oh my God, there's a whole niche for this.
So you imagine someone on a tube showing you an armpit. That would be still, isn't it? I don't know.
No, I think you're right. But what I'm saying, something that is overtly sexual, that's still not, it's still a bit kind of, out there.
Yeah, yeah. But you're right, when you're a 10-year-old to see that and to...
I think also because he was he wasn't a full-on teacher, so he was somewhere between us and them. So that was a kind of shock. And I mean, a couple of years later, when I was 13, I went to the World Cup with my dad.
Oh. Were you, what was your response to...
Well, I wish I'd been a couple of years older, because I think I would have found standing on the terraces...
Exciting.
...watching footballers quite exciting.
Yeah.
But at that, I was 13, my sexuality hadn't really kicked in. But, and it was awful, really. I mean, the whole thing.
I took a book when I went,
I mentioned it in the last series, actually, that it's where I discovered P.G. Woodhouse. And it really is. I remember
so many stories of football and P.G. Woodhouse.
Like, it was like exciting because we were staying in this hotel and we, you know, we were being treated quite well and it was all quite nice. But then the price you had to pay was we had to go to these two football matches. We had to go to England, France, and England, Czechoslovakia. And we were staying in San Sebastian. And the football matches were in Bilbao, which was like an hour's coach ride away. And it was so boring. And England, France, I will always remember as like being the time that I read my first Blandings novel. And England, Czechoslovakia, I remember, lasted exactly as long as it took me to read Aunts, Aunt, Gentlemen. But the reason I bring that up was there was another dad with another son, and he was a couple of years older than me. So I was 13, he was about 15. And we were... Normally, I wasn't really good with other children, but we got on quite well.
Yeah.
And we sort of played in the sea. There was a couple of days where we sort of just had time to play in the sea and things. And I remember thinking, I wonder if he's got armpit hair. Like Mr. Student Teacher. And he did a little bit. I thought, and I just like that. I do.
Were you a bit overwhelmed?
I was a bit overwhelmed, and I did. That was the first time I remember thinking, "Oh no, I do." Sort of, this is fancying it.
Yeah.
This is what this is. And it was kind of easy to compartmentalize. It wasn't like I went back to my room and sort of swooned about. But it was kind of, oh yeah, and I can't remember his name, but I wonder where so and so will be. But I know there's been a theme about crushes can reoccur and things. I feel like if I saw him now, he'd be a 56-year-old man. I'm a 50, nearly 54-year-old man. It'd be like, oh, no. I don't think there'd be a thing where I'd look at him and go, oh my God, the magic is still there. Still got the armpit hair.
No, I mean, we've established that you're not interested in that anymore.
No.
So your first crush is Mr. Armpits.
Presumably
that was quite brief. Like, was he there?
Yeah, I mean,
just
it was. I don't remember seeing
him
again. I just remember that very sort of, I say, that sort of lightning bolt feeling, and sort of thinking about that feeling of crushes. Well, that was in that ballpark. There wasn't really, as I say. So there was the at secondary school. There was the character in the French textbook. There was also, we had, so I was very lucky in a way. I had a sort of gay friend from straight away at school, Neil. And I don't think we really liked each other very much.
but it's good to bond.
But we had that. And yeah. It was very, I remember there was a point where, so we hadn't been said that we were gay. And then we had another friend, Emma. And I remember one, we must have been a bit older. And we were about maybe 13 or 14, and then Emma said to me in double maths one day, Neil had told her that he was bisexual at lunchtime.
Only at lunchtime?
At lunchtime. between 10 to 12.
By the end of the day,
well,
it
this
was
is the
fine
thing.
Again.
I remember being told off because I just like shrieked with laughter at the thought of Neil being bisexual, even though it had never been discussed. The thought that there might be women that Neil would look at and go, yeah, poor. So, I thought, I've got to do one better than this.
Had he come out by this point?
Yeah, he'd come out to her at lunchtime.
No, but had he said he was gay and then said bisexual?
Bisexual. And I can't think what, baby steps in the water. Yeah. And I can't think what had prompted him to do this. And I wasn't there. And I remember feeling very on the back foot. And I said, well, actually, thinking I'd go one better. I'm gay. And Emma sort of, that's come as a massive surprise. And then I think by the end of the school day, Neil had also accepted that he was gay.
But, that's so nice, though.
It was very lucky. We were very lucky in that way. But I do remember why this was a surprise, because I do remember, like, in the first year, was Neil and I were in the same form class. In the first year, Neil and I used to talk about fancying Mr. Keegan, who was a sports teacher. So there were two sports teachers for the boys. There was Mr. Walbioff, who was this Welsh rugby player who was all sort of big and muscly. And I always remember the most horrific thing. There was a parents' open evening, and my parents went along, and I don't know how it operates now, but they sort of saw each individual sort of subject teacher. And everyone was fine apart from the sports teacher. And mum and dad came home and said that Mr. Warbiff said, I didn't really try hard. And then really weirdly, Mum said, oh, but isn't he dishy? And I said,
wow.
Yeah, and I said, Mr. Warbiff, she said, oh, you didn't say he was that dishy. And he had this big, it was very 80s, this sort of big blonde moustache.
Amazing. Quite
muscly. And I remember thinking, like, the only person, if I'd heard that my mum fancied that would be more embarrassing, was my dad. I don't want to know. She's, oh, it's gorgeous. And I kind of almost thought, oh, no, it was me and Neil, like Mr. Keegan.
Yes, imagine if he'd said that. Amazing.
And Mr. Keegan was his sort of deputy, but just a much nicer man.
Yeah.
And not all this sort of weird blonde, muscly, mustachio
macho
thing.
Macho, yeah.
We both had sort of talked about fancying Mr. Keegan and with some other girls. I remember Nicola Traherne being involved. So I don't know why then us coming out to each other 3 years later or 2 years later was such a big thing. But anyway, it was in that weird way. So then we came out, and then we were sort of out at school.
Yeah.
Not, it wasn't a positive experience.
Oh, God.
But we were the puffs and the lesbians.
Yeah.
And that was exacerbated when you got to the point where when you did O levels in our school, you could choose. It was the last year they gave you this option. You could choose to do games or Latin.
Oh, wow.
So we did Latin. The puffs and lesbians did Latin. Which I got unclassified in. And
I
didn't do much work at all, but I was just like, I'm not in games. That's the main thing. And we would just go to the cinema and have crushes on Rupert Everett and things. So, and I don't remember, that maybe a little bit of one on Morrissey-ish. I don't know. I can't really. I think I probably slightly fancied rougher people as well, but I didn't think I could admit to that. I felt like I probably could only admit to fancying First World War poets and, you know, this kind of thing. They all had to be a bit romantic and failed.
But do you think that that's a bit, because I've talked about this on the podcast before, about how sometimes you fancy people because you sort of want to be them rather than because you've got an actual animal, you know?
Yeah, I think there's that, but also that this should be the person that I should be finding.
Really? It's
a bit more sensitive, you know. I went home and listened to Blossom Dearie records. I think I should be fancying poets, not some footballer, not some rugby player I've seen on the telly, which I think is probably what I kind of did.
Yes.
So it was all kind of, yeah, because I was like, you know, this sort of camp boy, and so therefore I should be sort of after that.
That's so interesting, isn't it, that you still have a thing about who you should fancy, yeah, as well.
Yeah. Well, it's, I think if you're gay, you have a certain age, you know, you grow up with a lot of what I shoulds and what I shouldn'ts, and that sort of stays with you throughout life in many respects. Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I was listening to somebody, in fact, I think it's in The Hours. I don't, have you read The Hours?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but I've read it. He talks about how much he loathes gay clubs, the sort of classic gay clubs, because he said, I feel like it's all the people who were bullied at school, and then they were, and they've put themselves into this club where they can bully, you know, it feels like a load of bullies.
Oh, really?
I feel like it's a real,
I feel my high, main objection to gay energy clubs is it means being out at night.
Oh, which yeah, awful. But I can imagine if you don't like that sort of music, yeah, and you don't like, you know, the clothes and whatever, you feel
internet,
like, oh, God.
You know, if like, I remember like, you know, say, and when did sort of things like, and then Gaydar and then Grindr and things like that happen? So when I was probably in my late 30s, really. Before then, if you wanted to meet someone, it was in a club or a pub or through friends or whatever. And my first proper boyfriend was through work at the BBC,
yeah,
but quite sort of distantly sort of connected. And yeah, I mean, that's how, and so kind of there was a lot of, oh, I ought to go out.
Yeah.
I ought to go out because I want sex. Well, I'm not going to get it indoors, am I? Whereas now, if you're into that sort of thing...
Oh, God, you can get sex.
Get sex indoors.
So you get sex indoors, and that's how far we've come, Chris. I'm so pleased for you as a community.
That's really improved. I think it's a big improvement. But, and I don't remember fancying boys at school. You know, I don't remember fancying...
I mean, I think that's the same for all of us.
Yeah, maybe like... And also like... If you are gay, you know, it's like the idea might have been all right, but then you had to sort of share a changing room with them and they were revolting.
Yes.
So actually, I know there is this thing, oh, it might be, you know, the smell might be, it's not horrible. It
yeah,
was
no,
like, oh,
I mean, God, teenage
I
boys.
Yeah.
Teenage girls, frankly.
I used to have to say, no, I can't have a shower, it'll affect my asthma. I'd sort of run home to see Wonder Woman.
Oh, we'd wrap ourselves in towels and we'd go into the cubicle and splash water on our shoulders. I mean, we
see,
must
you
have
had a cubicle,
stunk.
We just had a thing.
Yeah,
we had
were
a
lucky
wall that you walked behind.
Awful.
Oh.
Did anyone wash?
Yeah, some did. It's probably, the thing was, I remember a few months ago, we had some friends of Rory's over from dinner. They did it, and he's American. And they're now married, and they're straight. But he was telling me these stories of, like, his teenage life growing up in quite wealthy California. And it was all about, you know, fumbling with boys in the chain. I thought, oh, my God, this is like some sort of American fantasy. Oh, it was just the straight boys would wank each other off. Really? Why didn't I ever do that? I never got a chance to do that.
Maybe
if I'd gone behind the thing with the shower, maybe it was like a kind of gay.
Yes, you were missing out.
Yes.
No, if you don't board. Did he board? Or maybe it's just an American thing.
No, and I don't think the boarding thing is, I think that's a bit of a myth.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think.
My dad said, oh, I was never pretty enough for anyone to be interested in me.
Well, that's such a beautiful thing.
Isn't it?
But I just see it always happens to someone else. Every element that I might want in my life, or many elements of what I want in my life, they somewhere else.
But I think that's what crushes are kind of all about. It's all about that.
I find
the
that
fantasy.
Just is being alive.
Well, yeah, but you sort of have the distance between what you think is your life should be and what you're, you know, is just not.
Yeah, I mean,
never
I think there was a point
right
in my
20s
where everyone I met, every man I met, gay or straight, was like, oh my God, what? You didn't like suck off your friends at school? No.
Well, the producer and I are both laughing, so I don't think we were doing that either.
those poor A boys at your school.
Not
they'd
getting...
They'd be worn down to a stump.
Just a pink mist.
Okay, oh, but it just sort of happens, isn't it? I think, no, I was like, I think I'd have been really up for this to happen, but it just didn't happen.
No. No, although maybe you were, I was going to say, maybe you were doing something to, no, I mean, you know, that sort of thing.
What was I doing?
No, just sort of rejecting yourself almost, just sort of going, I'm not into, you know, I'm not presenting as someone
who's
up for.
Also, the other thing
was,
the one gay boy I knew was my friend Neil.
Yeah, who you didn't even like.
Who I didn't even particularly like. Which actually is often a preamble to fancying them.
Sure.
So that could have worked. But actually.
It didn't.
No, I mean, he... You know, he smoked his cigarettes with a cigarette holder and had a gramophone in his bedroom and a lemon, you know, cashmere V-neck jumper. And we went to record fairs together. I mean, it was not hot.
So So hold on, the cello and the trainee accountancy sort, but record fairs and lemon yellow cashmere. I mean, I think the lemon yellow cashmere sounds quite good.
I'll send you a spreadsheet. Okay.
Need the Venn diagram. What is okay? Yeah, please hot, just break not. It, break it down for me. Yeah, that's.
I think accountancy could be quite hot. I do my parents' tax returns now,
and it makes you hot.
And I've been dealing with their accountant, and I find him quite.
Oh,
hot.
Really? Yeah. And is it just because he's good?
Well,
at
I've only
it?
Spoken to him on the phone, but oh, okay. I've looked him up. And
oh wow!
Yeah, so accountants can be quite hot.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See, my dad's an accountant, so I just.
I've always
fancied
your dad.
Oh, he'll be delighted because you know he wasn't pretty enough
he had
for
no
it.
No, like at school.
This has gone in a really weird direction, Chris. I'm upset.
Pulling up to Mickey D's just for drinks. Oh, yeah, that's me. Nothing extra, just perfection and a straw. Coming in hot for the coldest cups on the block. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Get a creamy Oreo frappe or McCafe smoothie for less with 20% off any purchase of $10 or more. Only on the app. Limited time only at participating McDonald's. Valid one time per day. Visit McDonald's app for details.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi, I'm Sally. Back with more Great Wolf Lodge breaking news. The new lodge in Maryland is opening with some awesome new features for the whole pack. Here's Steven, reporting live.
Hi, Sally. After hitching a ride with the Great Wolves, my pack and I took it easy on the Lazy River, hit the Great Geyser Water Park, and now we're getting ready for a pillow fight in our kid cabin.
Stay safe out there, Steven. This is Sally, howling off from Great Wolf Lodge, Maryland.
So, do you still know Neil?
Yes, I do.
Oh.
Yeah,
well, we've been very rude about him.
Well, I mean,
you've been very rude about him.
Our friendship slightly disintegrated over Brexit.
Oh, how sad.
Yeah, it did
one
rather.
Of those.
And we have seen each other since a few times. I haven't seen him for about 3 years. It was a weird friendship because I think there was like, he was my oldest friend.
Mm.
I'm not sure if we'd met at 25.
Oh, well, we all have those.
You know,
yeah,
so it's
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of like, oh, why are we... But there was often a comfort in his comfort, in his company and an assurance. And
yeah, well, people know things about you.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
from having known you that long.
Yeah, yeah. But we... I don't think... You know, we haven't had any point where I'd go, I never want to see you again.
Yeah.
Politics has always been a bit of an odd one between us. But I think the Brexit thing just kind of like... was a bit of a hammer blow to it, really.
Yeah.
And then he moved away, and I kind of like, he left London, and he's not far away, he's only done in Surrey.
But you never fancied him?
No.
That was...
No. Yeah. I mean, it was mutual. It was like, yeah, no, I mean, it was like... No. So then I thought, oh my God, he's the one gay person I know.
Yeah, that's it. That might be your last.
Well, that was it. I kind of felt like, I remember having a long time thinking, I just need to meet a gay person, and then we'll go out.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh, no, I've done that.
I've done that. That didn't work. So when I say, who did you have a crush on, is there a name that you're like, this is the one?
Well, the first one. Okay, so the first one, and this is the one that I probably have the sort of the terrible, embarrassing crush story.
Go on.
Which verges on stalking, really.
Excellent.
I was 17 and I mentioned earlier, in case you cut it out, we used to go to pubs in Richmond quite a lot. Anyway, it was this pub by the river called the White Cross. And there was a barman in there who, I don't think when you're in your 50s, you sort of have this potential in you anymore. So I remember just seeing him and thinking, oh my God, he's just gorgeous beyond words. He was 23. I knew everything about him in the end. He was 23. He was called Paul Opie. And he was an oboist.
Wow, this is a real recurring thing.
Not a cellist. And I've been thinking about him a lot because I kind of think, well, I remember like I was obsessed with him. Utterly, utterly obsessed with him. And I think there is that I kind of wanted. Okay, so I remember having psychotherapy because I'd got to 29. I'd never had a relationship for more than about a week. And a friend of mine said, you need to go and see a therapist. And I then went out with someone for about 6 months. And I think looking back, there wasn't much that was great about the relationship. And I think it was just sort of going, I can do this.
Get you off
and
the that was, starting yeah, blocks.
Get me off the yeah. starting blocks. And the same with Paul. I think I was so like subconsciously primed to sort of spot yeah. someone. Now, of course, so you're so full of internalized homophobia. So, of course, he had to be straight. There wasn't going to be. It's not Heartstopper where there's the boy who plays rugby turns out to be gay. And anyway, he worked at the bar. I kind of had much to do with him because he was the barman in this pub that we went to, and then I would go there a lot on my own to sort of just mooch about over half a bitter. Oh God! And I would like if I was like wasn't working, it'd be like, oh my God, I've got to come back later. And it was like, I mean, I was just utterly. And of course, I think social media is the most brilliant thing.
Oh my God, I know
for many reasons, and I know it's destroyed lots of lives, but also now you
being able to track down the obstacles.
I mean, maybe when you're 17, maybe it doesn't help, because then actually just throws fuel on the fire. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's a worse thing. So anyway. So I was doing A-level music at Richmond. I was doing 2 A-levels in music at Richmond upon Thames College. So stupid. I wasn't very good at music. But I went into the college and I was doing English, French and music. And then I worked out quite quickly that French was quite hard. So I dropped French. And they said, but you've got to do a third A-level. Because this is so long ago. I'm so old that in those days, if you didn't do 3 A-levels, you could claim the dole.
Oh my God, amazing.
So you could just do 2 A-levels and claim. But for some reason, they really didn't want you to claim right. the dole. So they said, you've got to do a third A-level. And then I didn't want to do a third A-level because I thought it's just too much hard work. And they said, no, you've got to do one. So I said, well, there was another music A-level. It was a practical music A-level. There was the kind of general music A-level, which is what I was doing. And then there was the practical music A-level. I just wasn't good. And the only thing you could do at university then was music. I mean, it was like, well, I said, well, I'm not going to go to university. I'm just going to do this second music A-level because I won't have to do any work. I'm not very good. So they allowed me to do that. And then they said, oh, but your hours, you're still not doing enough hours. So they kept saying, maybe do typing or ping pong or something. What about anthropology? That's interesting. And I kept saying, no, no, no. And I spent most of those 2 years, it was in a separate college, it wasn't as part of a school, kind of in this pub in Richmond.
When they said you have to do something, you say, can I go and look at a barman every,
every afternoon? I had a part-time job in a hotel, so I did that. And that may have been one of the reasons, was the hotel was sort of near the pub, and that may have been why. Anyway, so I go along there, and there was this barman, and he was called Paul Opie, and he was 23, I was 17. I was utterly, utterly, utterly obsessed with him. And I remember being in another pub one day with some friends and seeing him walk past the pub window with a rucksack going somewhere. And I just like burst into tears.
Oh,
I kind of
Chris.
Think there was a bit of performative about it. I wanted this sort of drama. And I
remember
another night getting sort of drunk with friends and then bursting into tears. One day I thought, no, I've got to. I remember where he lived in this flat in East Twickenham. Rented a room in his flat in East Twickenham when I knew where it was, and because I followed him home, and it was all quite leafy streets and things. And I remember just walking one winter's morning when I should have been at college, getting the bus to this part and just walking these streets for like 2 hours on the off chance that I'm going, oh, hi, Paul. What are you doing?
I know.
Just
what
walking,
did you...
but sort of enjoying this. Kind
yes.
of, probably listening to my Walkman and rather enjoying this kind of desperate thing. And then I thought, well, this walking around the streets thing, not bumping into him, isn't really working as a plan. What can I do that's slightly more practical? Well, I'm doing music A levels. I don't know what he was doing. He was a bump, but he was obviously, I knew, you know, I think he still is a professional musician. And,
I'm glad that you know what he's doing now.
Oh my God. Yes. On Facebook. So he's now like, well, so he's like nearly 60 now. So it's this kind of weird thing.
I mean, I'm looking him up immediately. Yeah.
And so one day I said to him, oh, Paul. oh, God, this is so awful. I said, part of my practical A-level, and he was like so uninterested. You know, I wasn't a girl. I didn't even know him. I'd kind of occasionally say hello in the pub. I said, we've been set this task to sit with a musician while they rehearse. And he went, sort of, why? And I mean, I hadn't really thought this through at all. I feel like...
You really should have done. You should have known that that would be the question.
I'd gone, oh, well, I think it's just like to get a sense of what you do and how it works, what you're... I mean, I don't think I said anything as cogent as
no.
that.
No.
So anyway, somehow, I think just because he thought, what is this? He kind of let me... So we agreed on this time. So I went to this flat. I think in my head, I obviously thought... Oh, this is, we're going to sit there and then suddenly he's going to fling his oboe aside.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sexy.
So we sat in this living room.
In his, so it wasn't a rehearsal, like...
I think he might have even said, well, I haven't got anything I'm rehearsing for. Chris, that doesn't matter. No, I come to your house.
I've got tears in my eyes, Chris.
I come to your house and basically, I sit there and gawp at you. And if you could wear shorts, that'd be great. I mean, you don't have to pants if you like. I don't mind. So anyway, this was arranged. And I mean, like, you know, he's 23. And I go to his flat and I go in. I don't know. Even then, so I hadn't like, this is like a week later. I'd be like counting the minutes away. I could have like thought of a few questions or could have thought of something to do in this time, you know, between like him getting his oboe out of his case and us ending up in bed.
Yeah.
There was going to be...
Did you not picture how that was going to happen?
How this was going to play
blurry.
Out. I just kind of went, I think... Okay, so I think the reason I'm so late with everything in my life is that I'm very lazy and I never put the work in. So it's only really since I've been about 40 that I thought, oh, actually, I need to work quite hard. That's why I had a succession of shit shows at Edinburgh. I thought, oh, I'm quite a funny person. I can sort of turn up and wing it. And I didn't put the work in. I didn't think, oh, I can do this. I should ask him this. And just show me your mouth again there. Let me see the embouchure. I didn't think it. I just sort of turned up and thought I could wing it. And somehow it all... And actually, I don't think I even thought we'd have sex. I don't know what I thought.
No, you just want
happened.
To be near them in their private space.
I wanted to like corner him like a rat.
Then do nothing.
Do him. Nothing. And then back away. Anyway, so I went in and we sat down on two armchairs and he... So I can't... I also remember he said... I just sort of sat there as he started putting this oboe together. And he said, well, do you want to know what I'm doing?
Oh, God.
And I went, I remember sort of like thinking, well, not really. Not massively. But I kind of went, probably sort of, yeah. And he must have said, what are you, fucking nutter? Anyway, so he put this thing together.
Who knows what he thought?
I mean, who knows? I mean, and then... And then, anyway, he played for a bit and then stopped. And again, kind of went sort of over to you. This is an essay, you're supposed to. This is a research project.
Did you have a notebook or anything?
I don't think I did.
Oh,
I think
Chris.
I just sat there.
Chris.
Just like gawping at him or kind of then not gawping at him. Or just, and then he would go, what do you want to know about that? And I'd go, oh, what's that called? Yeah, I don't think I wrote anything down. I don't know how long this lasted. Probably only 20 minutes or so. And then I kind of sort of went, oh, that was great. Thanks. Bye. I don't think at the time it occurred to me it had been a wasted opportunity.
No. I would have been.
And I don't think I thought, oh, this is, if only I played it differently, this would have worked out really well.
No. No, but so you didn't feel dejected or embarrassed?
I don't know what I felt. I probably felt ashamed.
A bit ashamed. Yeah.
Really.
I think that's normal.
That's a fair enough response.
Very much speaking from personal experience, Chris,
shame is quite up there. What's your most popular emotion?
if you could send me a breakdown of that as well, your emotions. What you experience
most of
all.
I think there is a thing, if you are remotely, maybe anybody does this, but I think even if you're remotely sort of sensitive to things, I think I probably did have a moment where I kind of thought, what does this look like
from
your point of view?
I'd love to know.
Yeah, I mean, so he is on Facebook. So I remember at that time he was going off to play in the National Orchestra of Tenerife or whatever. And he did. And he's still there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's still there. And I think he's probably a bit of a creep. He's got a daughter who seems not that much younger than his new girlfriend, or maybe even older. I don't know. Anyway,
I love how much you know. It's so good.
Well, do you know what? When Facebook started, I thought, well, that's the only point of it.
Yeah,
I
mean, absolutely.
Yeah, the idea of like, I like your post, or or nudging people.
I live in fear of accidentally liking a post from 2013 of somebody that I am obsessively really looking.
Yeah, I tell you what, actually, I did do that when it wasn't a crush thing, but like, I had a second cousin who I'm friends with on Facebook. I don't know if I've ever met him, and his grandmother, my great aunt, is still alive. She's alive from an era. She's like 97 now, and I'd heard that her great granddaughter, not his daughter, but his cousin's daughter or someone, she died. Her great granddaughter had died. I thought, oh my god, this is awful. You remember, but isn't it? Anyway, I just looked her up on Facebook and saw that it was her. She was friends with my second cousin, and somebody had posted a kind of memorial thing like 2 days before, and I pressed the ha ha. So I don't know if anyone got a notification. Sorry, I don't know if anyone got a notification.
You know this bloke who's very distantly connected with you. He finds that death really funny.
Your uncle's second cousin is pissing himself.
So, Paul Opie, I mean, I'm sort of hoping that is the most embarrassing story. But
it is the most embarrassing story.
But are there any others that you
need to
tell us
about? Well, there were a
couple
at the time. I remember there was a guy called Nicholas Garforth, who I also met. I don't know how I met him, but he worked at the BBC, and he was the reason I wanted to go and work at the BBC. I thought, I'll marry Nicholas Garforth.
Perfect.
Now, this was one, he was gay, so this was good.
Marriage was not.
So at least not a thing, but at least, you know. But he was 10 years older than me, and I was just smitten with him. And he was a trainee accountant. He was a trainee accountant
at the
BBC. He was a BBC accountant. This is so weird.
Destiny.
But we did have a snog once. And we had a snog. And I thought, oh my God, my world sort of...
Yeah, did your head explode?
Yeah, my head really did explode. But we only had one snog.
Mm.
And then I wrote him a letter where I said, I want to do is your laundry and look after you.
The tears are back in my eyes.
And then I remember one morning my mum coming into my... I was still living at home, and my mum came into my bedroom and said, there's a letter for you. And I remember this oblong thing, and the letter was... It was very nice handwriting, and it wasn't written in the middle. It was written in the bottom left-hand corner. I thought, that's very sophisticated. And she said, who's that from? I said, I don't know. Just get away. So mum found it anyway. It was a letter from... It was a very nice letter from Nicholas, the fact that he chose to write back to me.
A nice basically said, cease and desist.
Yeah, I don't really want anyone doing my laundry. I don't fancy you.
What did he say?
Genuinely can't remember. It was nice, but it wasn't obviously what I wanted. He didn't take me up on my offer of laundry.
I could not relate harder to that. post snog laundry.
Oh my god! Yeah, I mean, I really let. I mean, I kind of went, oh, this is it then. This is the gay person I've now met. We've had a snog. He was a really good kisser. Let's just
do you know the after Dan and I had our first date, Dan's my husband, after our first date, he asked me if I'd stay over, and I said, I'm not going to stay over because if I do, I might propose to you. And he went, okay, here's the door. And walked me home. But it was so good because it was heading, like, it was me just going, no, because I might get a bit insane.
Yeah.
Can we just take it a bit slower?
Yeah.
And probably would have scared him if I'd proposed.
Oh, I don't know. The fact that you'd said that was kind of like saying
it's similar, but it's also saying
it's also saying you can lock the door for the next 20
and it was also a joke, enough of a joke.
Oh my god, I love your body language as you tell me it was a joke.
And I'm like, listen guys, I'm in a marriage that I got trapped into, help me.
Well, there was Nicholas Garforth. And then, actually, very recently, this wasn't really a crush, but it was, is that the power of dreams. I had this most erotic dream about Matt Hancock.
And I could not see him on the news for about a week afterwards. One bit of my brain was going, it's Matt Hancock. And the other bit of my brain was going, Sex Machine.
Oh, my God. And was this post-snog video?
No, I think it was before.
Pre-snog. So what did that do to you when you saw that?
Well, I think probably the magic had gone by that point.
Here's hoping.
But it was the weirdest thing. But somebody said, you know that thing like when you can in dreams and they're like different.
God. So powerful.
Sort of, very powerful. But it's getting, Matt Hancock. Like, but I sometimes would see him on the news and go, so that lasted a week. But I think the dream, the ideal surely would be that you have a crush on the person you're actually with.
Yeah.
And they feel the same. But I don't know if that's a...
No, but do you know what? Even if that does happen, it's not sustainable. And I think it might be weirder when that does end to go, this isn't feeling quite as head explodey as it did.
As it, oh, yeah. I feel very glad I don't have that sort of thing now, I have to say. Because it's quite...
You've been cured.
I think it was about trying to make myself feel alive. And because society didn't offer me the options of what could be the future, you sort of fill in the gaps.
Yeah.
And I was also, I was told that gay men were hysterical and histrionic and useless. And so, I did have to cry. I did have to kind of... feel a bit like that. So to sort of either prove them right, prove me right, prove the world right.
So confusing.
It was very confusing, yeah. I remember sitting with Emma, my best friend, we were sort of late teenage, and we'd sit in her room and there were always a succession of men and, that she was shagging or having crushes on. And I kind of felt, I enjoyed this experience with, we'd sit there and listen to the Ronettes or Billie Holiday or whatever. And it was all lovely, but she could actually do something about it. And I couldn't ever pinpoint it. So I just focused on Paul Opie and the Oboe Lessons.
Yeah. That's a really good title for something.
Paul Opie and the Oboe Lessons.
Yeah. It wasn't even a lesson, Chris. It was just, that would have been something, wouldn't it?
I know. If it had been something. If I turned it into something. If I thought to ask a question. If I thought to ask, what role does the oboe play in the orchestra?
It wouldn't be nearly as funny. So I'm very grateful to you for it.
I don't think I've ever said it out loud to anyone before, actually.
Oh, does it feel...
Just as shaming as it ever did.
Yay! Brilliant. Yeah, you've let it go. I absolve you of that shame. I mean, I can join you in many similar awful stories. Okay, so we're going to do the love maths now.
Okay.
So who is it, Paul Opie, that
Paul
you're choosing?
Opie, yeah, O-P-I-E.
Yeah. 3, 2 O's. I've done Christopher.
Oh, nice. You give him more options. Yeah.
V. Oh, this isn't looking good. Oh, hang on. 67%.
Ooh.
So.
Oh, my God. And
I know he's a creep, but if you go over to Tenerife and explain all of this, play him this. Recording
and go.
God, I wonder what.
And what is that? 67% chance of what? Or
That's how much the love will work between you. that's how good the marriage will be. 67%.
Well, I mean, that's not bad.
It's good.
Is it?
It's good. I'd take that. No, I think you should track him down.
Yeah, we'll definitely work. I think drop him a line. As I say, I've happened to come across him on Facebook before now.
Fancy dumping your young girlfriend for me?
I thought you said fancy a dump. As my opening gambit. Hi, Paul. We haven't spoken for 30 years since I turned... 35 years since I turned up at your flat and you played the oboe for me. But fancy a dump.
It's no weirder than your previous historical story.
Fancy dumping your young girlfriend for me. Oh, my God.
No, yeah. No.
Do you know what I mean?
You're well out of that.
This shows how keen I was. His uncle was an opera singer, Alan Opie, and I think he sang for the Welsh National Opera. And... I bought tickets to see something that his uncle was singing in because it was some sort of, connection to Paul.
How long did this last?
I don't know. It's so weird at times when you're that age, isn't it? Because the whole summers can feel like a year.
Yeah.
I'd say probably a year or so. Yeah. I'd moved on to Nicholas.
Better bet.
Well, Paul, I kind of was, he loved it. So it was the summer of 1987. So I was 18. And it was him that kind of, I think I've probably gone, so what do you like listening to apart from oboe music? And maybe one of the questions, and he said he really loved the Smiths, and that's why I bought Hatful of Hollow and spent all summer listening to that. So that was something I still quite like.
You've got that. You've got something out of it.
I've got something out of it, and a ticket to see the Welsh National Opera when they're on tour in London.
I mean, I could keep talking about this for a long time.
Also, well, there was another couple called something Obie who edited a book of fairy tales, and I was obsessed to know whether they were connected. And his book of fairy tales are edited by a couple of them, quite famous for doing something.
Yes, I think I...
Something and something Opie. I thought, oh my God, it's not every day you've seen the name Opie. I wonder if they're any relation. Now I could...
Now Google we will away. Go, we will sign off and go and find these things the out. Thank you so much. It's been amazing. Thank you, Chris Neil.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe as it helps people find where we are.